Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Andy Farrell, thank you very much for taking the time to join us. There's so much in this book I want to talk to you about, but what I'm going to start with is there's a phrase that comes up a number of times in the book, and it seems very much to be a mantra for you, something that's very important, about the players in your care, they're almost in your care, about making sure that they're the very best that they can be. I think that phrase does come up on quite a few occasions. How did that realization come to you as to that being important, and why is it so important to you?
Good question. I think it's important because that's your duty as a coach. Or otherwise, what's the point? If you're not going to improve the individual, then you're certainly not going to improve the team. So. It's understanding the bigger picture, I would have thought, from the get-go of how it is that you're going to be the best team that you possibly can be. And if you're chasing down the team's potential, then you've got to do that with the individual as well. And I think there's a hell of a lot of happiness, joy, all of that in that way of thinking.
In being the best of yourself.
I'm helping people to get the best out of themselves and getting out of their own way and trying to challenge themselves and open themselves up to be the best version of themselves, yeah.
How many people do you think in sport fail to achieve that?
I don't think anyone perfects it. You know, we're chasing perfection. Nobody ever gets there. Otherwise, we'd all finish and say we nailed that one. But I suppose that's the glory in it all, isn't it? That you're striving to improve the whole time. I think that's at the right at the top of the list.
How well do you think if you've done that for yourself? Get the best out of yourself.
Highs and lows, ups and downs. In the book, though, you'll soon realise if you can get through it that there's a lot that's gone into a life from being 14 years of age signing for Wigan there up until where we are now, 36 years on. There's a hell of a lot packed into that and. For the good and bad, but I suppose the hard times understood and broken down and pushed on in the right manner tends to kick you on as well.
You say the only way I know. What do you mean by that? The title of the book.
I actually don't know. We was debating what the title was and. Gavin Mears, who did a fantastic job in bringing all the memories back out of me, along with my wife, he thought it was clear and obvious because that's what I kept on saying in our conversations. That, you know, I suppose it's a flippant type of remark, but that's the only way I know.
The reason I asked that is because the one thing that really struck me in having read it all. Is that you're on a continuous journey of learning.
Yeah.
And that it's not that you tell people this is the only way I know how it's done, that you're actually very open to learning from other people and learning
exactly
new
that.
Things.
Yeah. It was well described because the latter is not the way for me. I suppose you learn over time that if you're a coach and there's obviously a player that you're connected with. If it's just dictatorship and you're not bringing their knowledge to the party, then you're missing a bit of a sweet spot there.
It's also very noticeable to me, and I don't know how much you were conscious of it in writing the book as well, how often people turn to you looking to you to take on leadership positions, such as becoming captain of Wigan at the age of 20, becoming captain of the Great Britain rugby league team at a young age as well, then been sought out to become a coach and been offered various positions along the way. What is it that you think about yourself that you have that makes people turn to you to look to be their leader?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's something that I have reflected on because of the book. I would say first and foremost that I've never asked to be a captain or a coach. You know, you get asked, I suppose, because people think that you're suited to that way. I probably take it back to the type of player that I was. I played with some unbelievable athletes were almost superhuman in a sense of speed, footwork, strength, beating people, not just 1v1, 2v1, all that type of stuff, scoring a hat trick of tries, and that wasn't me. I wasn't like that. My way of helping the team was tactics, understanding how we perform as a team, as a group, how we start the game, how we navigate our way through the good times and the bad times within those 80 minutes, and how you cope with the season and the long nature of all that, and the pressured games. And it's something that was unbelievably interesting for me, probably because I didn't have those attributes. So I always lended my hand to trying to work out how everything worked and gelled together as a group.
Yeah, I think maybe you're being a bit modest in relation to that, in your abilities as a rugby league player, because if you didn't have a big skill set, you wouldn't have been one of the first players really to move across to rugby union. When you were picked by Andy Robinson to get involved with the England team with a view to the 2007 Rugby World Cup.
Well, I suppose that's why, you know, both codes of rugby, that's why the people that love it do love it, because it takes all shapes and sizes and all different types of ability to make a team. And, you know, if you just had natural physical ability and you didn't have the tactical brain or the understanding of how to unlock defences or how to defend in pressurised situations, etc., then you've not got a team. You might have a team that can score a few tries. They probably leak a few as well, you know, along the way. So that's why I think we love the sports in general.
You've had a lot of lucky breaks as well along the way, haven't you? Sort of surreptitious moments. Yeah, but you appreciate that. It's not a question of you actually thinking that they were your due or anything like that.
Just, I mean, I would have thought, you know, even just thinking back now, probably the luckiest break is being born in Wigan, being taken to a Graham West summer school, who was the captain of the Wigan side. It wasn't something that I wanted to do. I was shy enough as a youngster. I was playing football rather than rugby at the time. I got forced really to go along to just try and make some time up in the summer, and I got asked to go to a team who my coach on the summer school was actually coaching, a guy called Hayden Walker. To have met him that day, that's a lucky break, because how he got us competing and not just against the opposition, but against each other. He was way ahead of his time as far as coaching was concerned for children, and I'll be forever grateful for that. And then when you put that towards the team that everyone aspires to try and make it to, that was the Wigan rugby team. There was the best of the best at that time. So you can see now the lucky breaks all the way through. It certainly shapes you for the person that you're going to be in the future.
What really struck me reading all of that about your life growing up and the love of Wigan and rugby league was, if you'd been born in Ireland, what sport do you think you'd be playing? what sort of community sort of involvement do you think would you have had?
Well, I would have definitely been involved in whatever the community did. And
see, I could see you as a GA person.
100%. I mean, the first thing that we did 10 years ago when we got over here as a family, as Gabriel, he was five then. We went down to the bottom of the road and Clonagail was the club at the bottom of the road. And you know, do you take him to a club like Kilmacud or whatever that is, one hell of a machine? Or do you go with something that's more local to you and buy into all of that? So that's what we did with Gabriel. And I would think throw yourself into any sport, as many sports as you possibly can, and it works itself out eventually.
Because it does come across as well. I mean, you grew up in what was a very working class background, yeah. And you're proud of that. But there is a line somewhere in the book as well that it was as you grew older and matured, you started judging people according to their character and their behaviour rather than their sort of economic background.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit different from where we're from. Wigan is smack bang in the middle of Manchester and Liverpool. And if you look right or you look left, there's a different accent, there's a different type of feeling in all the towns. And they're not big, these towns now, but the rivalry is vast. So say, for example, I was brought up in Lancashire, and you know, there's Widnes and Lee and St Helens and Warrington and all these teams. The competition and the rivalry there is hard, vast, brilliant, daunting, all those things. And we're not even competing against Yorkshire yet. So the knock-on effect makes the rivalry special.
It's like local rivalry in GA.
Yeah, 100%. It is. So that's what you're brought up with, and 100%. That definitely shapes you.
The reason I bring it up is that I suppose you know there used to be a sort of snobbery in rugby union circles towards rugby league. You know, this was the paid professional thing. Before, when you were younger.
You're saying that now, not me.
No, I know I'm saying this, right? And, you know, amateur rugby sort of almost disdained, paid for it. Then everything changed when rugby union went professional and the rest of it. But I was interested because you embraced very much with the Irish team, trying to get the players to understand the importance of the jersey and of the flag and of the 32-county nature of it, things that you felt weren't spoken about. But I suppose the other thing in rugby used to be in Ireland, an awful lot of it coming from the fee-paying schools, and has it got enough of being for everybody in Ireland rather than all the players coming out of a particular element of society?
Well, I suppose my job at the international end of the game is you never see anyone in a light of where they've come from or what's got them or what's got them to that point. Obviously, it's important to know the background, to understand what makes them tick, etc. But you take everyone as you see them firsthand. For the first time, and that's the way society should be.
Yeah, but is that something that maybe you came to understand more as you matured as
probably
a person?
Yeah, I would definitely have thought so. I mean, we used to go on holiday to Blackpool, and that was half an hour down the road. I used to think that was abroad. We used to play Hull FC away or Hull KR away. And that was a 2-hour 15 bus journey, and you know, I thought I was going to Australia, you know, because of the nature of Wigan, St Helens being 5 miles away, Lee being part of Wigan Borough, all of that, the competition was right on your doorstep the whole time, and it was really scrutinised because it was so intense, because of the nature of how close the rivalries were. And I suppose as you get older and you start going on tour and you start travelling to all these different places, etc., your mind starts to open up and you start to want ask questions of yourself, challenges of yourself, not just of yourself, of your family, etc. And moving down to London to Saracens was a huge step, but one that we was looking forward to find out whether we could or we couldn't deal with it.
Because if you hadn't done that, you could have spent your whole life effectively living and working in Wigan and surrounds and in rugby league, and you wouldn't have expanded yourself, would you?
And 100%. I mean, all my friends and family all still live there. That's the beauty of the place, that it's such a well-knitted community that nobody wants to move out, and rightly so, because of everyone knows each other, everyone's got each other's back, everyone looks after one another. Not many people move out of the town, you know, and, you know, it's... I've been away from Wigan, as in living away from Wigan now for too many years to count. I've been away from Wigan more than I was actually there, and that's no, I haven't. No, I haven't. It's 28. It's 28. I'm thinking I'm 60 now. No, I'm not. But I'm 100% nothing but a Wiganer.
Yeah.
And through and through, and how I was brought up and bred within the town, and what the town meant to me, as 100% still shares me to this day.
Yeah, that's what made you. But then you expanded beyond.
You do,
that
and your horizons, and you understand that people are just people, and perceptions and all of that is completely wrong.
Because I was drawing the comparison earlier between the sort of GA communities we have in Ireland and what you have in Wigan. So what's your sense of Irishness?
I've seen all that, you know, because I've watched the rugby union games on a Saturday for school, or for the amateur game on a Sunday here. And I've also seen all the GAA games, hurling and football, and been around and travelled around the borough and the country with the rugby. So I've seen all that. It's exactly the same. Exactly the
you
same.
You don't see many differences, do you, between Irish people and English people?
I see big differences. And that's...
Which ones in particular do you see? And what sort of comparisons do you see?
I see comparisons to my childhood and how it was, and the competition and what it means to people in different ways, and the hunger that you see from families, different natured in different parts of the country. I don't think that's any different in any country, I would have thought.
But do you think, are we more supportive of our sporting teams than maybe the national team for England? I know that the support in local levels and likes of rugby league is passionate. Again, sort of the comparison with the club game or the county game in GAA in Ireland, or with Munster or with Leinster and whatever. Yeah. But you do seem to, I think, I mean, given your experiences with England and your experiences with Ireland, have you felt that there's more of a sort of a national support for
the
national team?
I've certainly found that there's a pride and passion that is unwavering in Ireland to their teams, and it's not just in rugby or football. It's in any sport. It's in any sport. I mean, we've heard of in the UK sports people who just think that they're from a certain part of the world and a certain part of the country, and that's what they are. They're not even. They don't class themselves as being English or British or whatever, and that's the type of passion that they have from where they're brought up. So, you know, I think in Ireland, I think everyone embraces the Irishness, and not just here in Ireland, but that's the Irish abroad. And
although before you arrived, we used to have the Munster-Leinster thing being a big issue as to who got picked for who, the players, whether they cared more for Ireland.
And that rivalry is a must. It's huge. You want the competitive nature, but I suppose when you know you've seen it with the Irish in general, whether it be at the Olympics or at the World Cups in soccer over the years, etc., and certainly in the not too distant future with the rugby, of how they get behind the teams.
Yeah, I was wondering why you actually wrote the book now. Why haven't you waited until after you win the 2027 World Cup?
I've always said that throughout my career, and some of my playing mates now are slagging me, that's for sure, in regards to getting this book out there. I suppose the simple reason for me is that we obviously had Owen very young, and we got married young, we had our girls very young, and then later on in life, further down the line, we had Gabriel, and the difference in our kids, the three of them that were born in a similar type of time frame, they was brought up with my career, through my career, of an understanding of how that happened, because they were dragged along with it the whole time. But Gabriel didn't see all that, and he thinks he knows it, but this is probably 100% filling in all the blanks. And on top of that, we've two grandkids now. I'm sure we'll have more down the line when the girls get going, etc. So I suppose it's a nice way of putting it all down on paper for the Farrell family in general to get a hold of in the future and see what their history looked like.
Becoming parents at the age of 16 is remarkable, and you're very honest in the way you discuss it and the reaction of your parents. I mean, I almost laughed when I saw the idea of your mother giving you a slap around the head.
Yeah.
You know, you big Egypt, you and sort
yeah,
of, but then being
so.
There and being there for you afterwards. And that's one thing that very much came across, that
yeah,
sense
lucky.
Of family and community, yeah, everyone was there for
very
you.
Lucky, because, you know, it's certainly not something you'd recommend, is it, to get yourself into that type of situation. But you're not feeling sorry for yourself, you're feeling sorry for the people that you've let down, who brought you up in the right manner. Both sets of parents, from myself and Colleen's side, brought us up in the right manner, and there's certainly a sense of we've let them down. But how they reacted and got through that initial period and helped us to become the parents that we should be was all down to them.
But you had a real sense from an early age of responsibility.
You do, and you have to. The sense of love when you've got a child, you know. I would have been far removed from that. I mean, Colleen's side, there was always babies, cousins and etc. In the family, but not as much on my side. So to say it was a bit awkward at first would have been an understatement. But, well, once that baby's yours, and the sense of bond and the love that goes with that is unbelievably powerful. And I say this to this day to all the lads that play in my teams, and you know, a lot of our players are in that type of situation now, where they're starting families, and you don't know how much you love kids until you've held your own.
And that's why at times when players have things like when partners are giving birth, you say, you're going to the birth, you're not playing the match.
Yeah, well, it wasn't necessarily like that for me, but...
Because
whatever's important to them, whatever they feel is right and whatever they need to do to be supportive, family 100% comes first, and that should always be the case.
Because... did this play into, you think, the fact that you had shown responsibility in your own personal life meant that you became your captain of your club at the age of 20, that it was beyond just your playing abilities, that you could see the responsibility issues? Because it brings about a question for me. Are leaders born or are they made? Or do you have to have certain characteristics to be a leader like yourself, which then have to be developed?
Well, I don't know why, wholeheartedly, why I was always asked to be a captain, whether it be at junior level or whatever. Maybe because I had a mouth on me, whether I was talking sense or not. I suppose you learn how to try and control that as you go through it. But you can certainly learn it. I mean, I don't think you're in the right frame of mind to want to be a leader if you're not prepared to learn. So, for example, from where I was, the dog-eat-dog type of nature that I was thrown into as a 16-year-old making my debut there at Wigan, that was, a lot of it was through fear of failure, letting people down, and it was driven wholeheartedly by the leader of the group, which would have been the captain and the head coach. But things have changed. You fast forward 30 years, things have changed massively in regards to how people learn now, just through the nature of the millennials and what they've got at their disposal to be able to learn and work things out together. You know, it's vast from what I thought was right to how I would coach now.
Yeah, but you wouldn't throw out all the things from the past, would you? No. Surely there must be things.
You take all the good with everything, yeah. And that's all you're trying to do throughout a career where, you know, I was lucky enough to play in some great teams, but the learnings that I was learning all the way through that, it was always going to come to fruition of how I thought I could collaborate all that together and yet be myself within all that. And there's a nice mix in that.
When I brought up earlier the issue of the players and the backgrounds they come from, the reason I asked that is that there have been some people who have wondered, and you might take issue with this, as to whether mentally some of the Irish players and Leinster players particularly coming from the private school background are actually tough enough, whether they actually have the mental resilience and drive that might have come from people like yourself sort of clawing your way up in life.
Well, there isn't just that type of personnel within our squad anyway, but I wouldn't say that there's one person that I've coached whilst being in Ireland, no matter what background they've come from, that they're not tough enough. I haven't seen that. I haven't felt that. I try to get rid of the debates in regards to that and just deal with the individuals and how I find them.
How ruthless are you, though, when it comes to not selecting players for the team or for the squad? Because you do say in the book as well, from an early point, when you were left out of teams, you were how upset you were and how you wanted to know why it was that you hadn't been picked. If you have situations now, and it's not just when you leave players out of a team or in the squad, but if you maybe bring a player into the squad, doesn't live up to expectations, how do you handle moving them out of it?
Through constant communication of letting people know where they're at. So I don't think bad news should ever come as a surprise, as long as people understand where they stand within the group and where they're at and what it is that they're chasing down as far as improvement's concerned. I think if we're all on the same page as far as that's concerned, then bad news isn't a surprise, you know. Keeping people competing in that manner is a must in any type of pressurised environment.
Just a couple of things to finish off. If you were to pick up one moment with this Irish rugby team, and I know this is just specific to Ireland because you have lots of things in your career, if there was one moment in your time with Ireland that you enjoyed the most, what would it be?
You would think it's the glory of winning whatever it may be.
A Grand Slam?
Yeah, or, a championship in general, or, a game in hostile places, challenging places. Or
beating South Africa in the last World Cup in front of all of
New
those
Zealand,
fans in Paris.
But it's the journey for me that I love the most, and time spent growing together, enjoying each other's company because you're pushing forward in the right manner as far as getting better as a group, as a team. You can see that self-improvement. Those periods get prolonged in World Cups. You get in the pre-season. You're growing through the warm-up games, the start of the competition together. And when I say together, I'm talking about with the fans, and we're all trying to get through this together. That's special. That's something that's a little bit bigger than the big W.
Well, because about halfway through the book, you do say winning is everything. And I suspect
winning matters massively, but there's something that has to be bigger than that.
Because as a player, I suppose winning was everything. It wasn't about the journey as a player. It's different as a coach, isn't it?
Well, certainly in our world, team sports, you're not always in control of the winning. To me, if you've 25 exaggerated injuries, illness, bounce of a ball, conditions, referees' decisions, all of that, yeah, you're not 100% in control. You're in control of how you react to all those things and how you handle those type of situations, how you grow physically, mentally, together as a group. That's pretty powerful.
We're out of time. Andy Farrell, it's been great meeting you. Thank you so much. The book is terrific. I've really, really enjoyed it. It's a terrific insight into your career and into the way you think. And it's exactly as honest as I would have expected it to be.
I appreciate that. Thanks very much for your time.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger fuel centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.